Section 29 of the Correctional Services Act.
Chair, I can give a bit of background there as well. I think Anne will bear me out here. Section 29 of the Correctional Services Act, 1959 Act, says that a child must be brought back to court every 14 days, and that has proved it's terribly problematic, in fact, and it's almost backfired. So, and this is also a result of the deliberations in the committee in 2003, and it was suggested that
no, if you remember, this is that legislation that was amended in 1994 and again in 1996. And it's the only section of the Correctional Services Act still standing, if I'm correct, of that old Correctional Services Act. It's waiting for this act to sort it out. But essentially, that was put in, so that 14-day thing was a new provision that went in 96, or maybe 94, I can't remember which one, but one of those two made it 14 days. And the idea was that when a child is been arrested and in custody, it's good for them to come back often so that they can say to the magistrate, something terrible is happening to me at the place where I'm being kept, or I haven't seen my parents yet, or whatever. But I must agree with Lawrence that on the ground, what has happened is the dockets are in constant circulation. The 14-day period just seems to mean that no one, the police don't hold their dockets long enough to investigate the cases. So the children, if you go to children to prison and you meet children and you ask them, when is your next date and what's going to happen on that date? They say, I'm going to court to get my next date. So they even see it just as a kind of a conveyor belt of repeated appearances. And for that reason, we're the NGOs are not opposing the 30-day idea, but we are worried about children in places other than in prisons, like the children in secure care facilities and so on, and we're suggesting that there should also be a period for them. And if it's not going to be 30 days for them to relieve the pressure of the system, then at least every 60 days.
NPA, you're saying current practice is 14 days.
Hmm.
So what's the problem?
My take is the problem is in other courts, we don't have precedent for this liaison officer to sign the investigation officer's time. because when we are president, like, there isn't any other than I think if police can make the point that each and every court has the point in a resident for the client to take care of the movement of doctors, I think maybe this can be addressed. Maybe they can appear to the 10 day or the rest of the case.
Are there any other comments on that?
I think we should leave it at 30 days as well. I don't think we could, because 14 days is happening in the case. The question is, what is the value of it? If he's doing the sort of thing and I think we just leave it. Also, I want to alert listeners that I think the direction we take as a majority is to make quite frequent changes to the policy issues. So where we don't need to fight it out over things that will create a slight strain on the resources of the state, let's not do it. Unless there's a very strong argument from the NGO, maybe I just think we should leave it.
From what Anna said, the NGOs are not asking, but my concern is, what is the existing law?
Yeah.
The existing law seems to be 14 days. Okay.
We
are changing it to make it longer. The advantage of this, and we had a discussion over lunch as well, is what happens when a child gets remanded in custody when they shouldn't be. A shoplifter with 500 rand to play. At the moment, that will get picked up by correctional services, assessed through the Parliament of Social Development, provincially and then nationally. But where they will then try and correct the problem is court period, which is the 14 days. If you've got a magistrate, I mean, a lot of what is in this bill is to give direction to magistrates who may want to take shortcuts. If you've got a lazy magistrate, you might find the magistrate saying, no, let's remand every 30 days. Less time. Why must I remand for a shorter period? So there is some benefit in it. And my concern is this thing of going backwards. From what I understand the MPA is saying is that it's happening in cases in courts with liaison officers. But anyway, so that's my concern. I don't want to be the sole
I just like Lawrence to just revisit what he was saying about if bail has been refused, in the Criminal Procedure Act, this is now for adults, but I guess it's for all offenders as well. If bail hasn't been paid, you have to come back to court every 7 days anyway. But it is new legislation, although it's an old act, it was passed after 94.
I think the 30 days is too much for children who are sent to detention because parents cannot be traced, or for children who have committed minor offences. But for children who have committed your serious offences, where normal court proceeds a bail application, that 30 days, I think it's applicable. But for any other thing that is not that serious, I think the 30 days is too much. Because those children will be, for example, in the care facility, there will be keeping space for children who deserve to be in the care facility. Because we shouldn't only look at this for children who are in prison, also for children who are in the care facility.
Okay.
I would rather suggest that we keep the 30 days for children who have committed jurisdictional offences. But for children who have committed jurisdictional offences, but they cannot trace their parents, we speak to the 14th year of man.
What about the secure care issue?
No,
but it'll be called a child and youth care centre in the
my memory serves me correctly, the provision that was originally in the 2002 bill dealing with residential facilities was taken out at the request of the
I think it was also 30 days and 60 days in the 2002 bill.
How many with adults that would be governed by the Criminal Procedure Act? How long can you, what's the maximum you can remand a case?
Sorry, just that at present, because the Correctional Services Act only applies to prison, there is no regulation of the time that children, the length of postponement for children who are in residential facilities. So, I mean, at this stage, we can concede on the time period, but we'd like the principle that there be some kind of regulation of the length of postponement for children who are in residential facilities.
That, I presume, and thank you, Shireen's joining us, that would most probably also have a financial implication for the fact, and I'm not too sure who do the transportation there. Would it be the police?
Who does the transportation? Police.
Drafted our responses, but so they're all covered by secure care facilities. And we actually put in 67.2, there might also be a need to do that.
This deletion was at the request of the committee in 2003. But
you're happy with including placements, associated placements, but you're concerned about the resources. What is happening? 30-day remand is quite a long time. I would be very surprised if cases being remanded is longer than 30 days. I mean, as it is generally 14 days or more. Would you not find that it would only be the exception that remands would take longer? But in other words, there shouldn't be any substantial difference on the resources aspect.
Well,
Yeah, what we've noticed is that children in secure care centres, once it gets to setting matters down for trial, the first few times they appear fairly frequently, but once the matters get down for trial, it can be a 3-month, 4-month postponement. And for them, that's a very long time to wait.
It's worth mentioning it for what it's worth. It's not only the problems that Anne is highlighting, in provinces like the Northern Cape as well, the
This clause has become very complicated and quite useless. The original idea in the 2002 bill was similar to the underlined wording in our comments here. If trials are not finalised within 6 months after plea, then children who are detained in prison or child and youth care centres should be released unless charged with murder, rape and robbery with aggravating circumstances. This is not a requirement that the trial must be completed within 6 months. It is a requirement that if the trial is not completed within 6 months, the child should be released on bail or into the care of his or her parents or guardian. So just to clarify, it's not a requirement that the trial must be completed, right? It's about releasing children from detention if the trial takes longer than 6 months. Quite a big distinction in you know, how it's being put across and what actually the original clause was meant to imply. So it's a way of limiting the length of time that children could be held in custody, and it's very reasonable the way it was proposed because it excludes murder, rape and robbery, and those are the offences on which you're more likely to spend very long periods in custody anyway. And the position of the NGOs at this stage is that if Section 67 is going to remain in anything like its current form and doesn't go back to the six-month period, we would prefer it be deleted in its entirety because we believe the Constitution gives a better guarantee of speedy trial than is reflected here. This actually will damage what the constitutional protection is.
I'm having a serious problem with the views that say that
that for the mistakes committed by his or her representative, and the child might be blamed.
Mm.
I mean, we know how lawyers behave. Sometimes they don't attend to attending another important case to them. So why might we blame the child for that?
Those are the exclusions.
But
one has to be very mindful when we detain them in the first place. It's conditional and it's dependent on why they've been detained in the first place. And suddenly release them also goes against the whole argument that many children are used by adults. And so one has to be very, very guarded to suddenly release them after 6 months because of the system. And that is why we have to.
From the committee side, are there any are there any views on changing things here? Two years and 12 months period.
I like the idea of sort of having some sort of
intention to sort of put pressure on the prosecution to say we have to bring the evidence to do it in a quicker way. The thing about the missing children of 6 months is just maybe Anne can help. What do you do with a child who you don't know where the parents are? I'm sort of caught between the practical aspects thereof and the intention of,
my issue is also just very strongly on this child would not have made bail, and if we even got bail, we wouldn't be able to say that she can't pay whatever we can get. So this child, if you don't make bail, it's because certain reasons that you have to consider in the criminal procedure act. And now you're going to release this child. Where are you going to find the child again? Because it might be a child that has moved from place A to place B and avoided the police in any case or imperialism. So I just find that 6 months for me is just really impractical. If you look at what's going on in practice, if you look at the statistics that you're in and have, I think 6 months may be too short, maybe 2 years is too long, but 6 months, I'm not sure we can do that.
Well, then what about the proposal that we take it up?
I mean, that's the issue of what existing constitutional provision.
A right to speedy trial, and I'm sure that we can do better than 2 years if we took it to court.
Has the court been any judgment on that?
No.
Okay, I don't want to keep belaboring this point. I mean, from the committee side, are there any support for changing the section?
Or removing?
If not, then I think it stays.
Any decision made in terms of subsection 2 must enter the reasons for such decision of the legal proceedings. Definitely, I'm not even negotiating.
Okay.
Then the next one is. Charge of the order that
We just wanted to make the point that, for example, that subsection Roman numeral 5 is incredibly complicated, but if we are going to resolve all the issues around diversion, that will probably then get sorted out. This problem is...
The tiles and the pairs are certainly right. Now, what is the difference between the tiles and the pairs?
I think what we said on the previous occasion is going to really.
Because, like, a 17-year-old can refuse, you know, and what the pairs are.
But our decision that
my worry is child in his household. If you've got parents or an appropriate adult, but if a child in his household, you may not have an appropriate adult. The way I read it is that the, I mean, obviously the child has to read the diversion. If they're not participating in the process, they won't stick it to whatever is important. But this requirement of if you've got parents that are exerting parental control over the child, then their support is necessary and is important. The way it's phrased, I would have read it as being there has to be a parent or an appropriate adult. It can't be no.
Can be solved if we go back to the, where we first have consideration of diversion is clause 50 sub 1d. It reads the child and, if available, either her parent or appropriate adult. So the wording should be the same in this clause, so we can just align the wording.
But it doesn't solve the problem of the need for the child. What if they prefer the child or the parent?
I think that the way it's phrased at the moment is both the parents, so both the child and the parent, the appropriate adults available, actually agree. It's a question of do we want to include the parents. And let's think quite carefully about that. If you are a parent, say, you have a child who's 17 who you can't control. I'm speaking hypothetically. Let's say you've got a child that you are responsible for, but you can't control. You therefore don't feel the parent of the diversion will work. Is it right then to exclude that parent of you? So, firstly, I think what I'm advancing is that it should be both is a pairing towards it's more guardian rather than appropriate adult. And if there's no guardian, then that person shouldn't really have any say. Why? What are they? So I would have seen it as child and talking off the top of my head, but child and legal guardian or whatever, yeah, caregiver or whatever, but somebody who's got some kind of appropriate adult is very important.
I've just remembered what the committee decided in clause 50, that the prosecutor has the final decision when the prosecutor knows cases and not decide not to deal with. I think that's what the committee sort of said in clause 50. That you think that is where you have a problem like that.
I didn't know what my answer to this question was until I raised it now. And I think maybe we should have the child and the parent. Both must be doing.
Mm-hmm.
I was just asking, what if they disagree? Then they must have intervention to agree. I don't think we should leave it just for the child to decide what's best. So my answer to the question, they must both agree, let's leave it as it is. On the other issue about whether an appropriate adult should have the same right as the parent to have a say, I think no, but given all the problems we have and the time constraints and difficulties, I think leave it as it is. That's my first view.
Okay, from the committee side, well, from anybody, Jackie, on anything on that point, so we basically leave it as it is, but we include where available, or whatever the wording was earlier. That's really the only change that was made. Are there any other inputs on this?
Just one thing. Presumably, the last word is to stop the proceeding. Now, in practice, the proceeding has stopped because there is a pursuit of a divergent option, right? And then, if it doesn't work out, everything works out, then you stop the proceeding. And this sense, proceeding means legally that the matter is still proceeding even though there's divergent and stopping it.
What
happens
in
practice
if the divergent order still comes back and then
I just suppose the word proceeding is correct. Thank you, Mike.
Okay, can we move on? 59, Carol?
Could we go back to 67?
Why not?
Go
back to clause 5.
No, it's just 2 years in the life of a child is a hell of a long time. And could we maybe just discuss this in the study group before we throw it out? But rule me out of order.
Very emotional.
We're saying trial said 9 months.
Yeah.
And then we want to make it 2 years. It's just, well, I don't know. It doesn't feel like. But I mean, it was an idealistic do-gooder.
Hey, Jackie, get more.
Okay, no, I mean, that's fine. It's tagged that. I mean, I think the issue is the balance between, although this is, as Anne keeps pointing out, this excludes the serious offences, there's still, I'm personally uncomfortable with the 6 months. I think it just won't work, and you will then get kids going out on the street. It might be for minor offences, causing a public backlash.
Well, Chair, I don't want to reopen the discussion, but when you do discuss it in your study group, could I also ask you to discuss the possibility of removing the clause altogether then? Because that would also deal with your concerns, but would do it in a way that doesn't mess up the jurisprudence.
But what is...
No, it's fine,
I'm
sure you can debate it about
it. But what is the jurisprudence?
Well, the possibility to develop jurisprudence, I should perhaps say. In other words, I would rather see the courts define what speedy trial means for children than have it be 2 years or 1 year or whatever set out in legislation, because that will limit how that can be interpreted.
So, on that point, is that if you look at in each of the individual cases, whenever there is, if I can just do it very practically, say you have a matter in the regional court, and the regional court role only opens up for a trial date in 8 months' time. Obviously, then you can't, you know, it's practically impossible to finalize the matter within that 6 month period. You know, it's only going to be finalized within an 8 month period. But say you have a situation where you have, and the point was is that we excluded murder, rape, and armed robbery because those are the most frequent matters in front of the regional court. Say you have a simple housebreaking and theft, and you get a trial date within 2 months, child teen. And your trial date is in 2 months' time, and the witnesses can't be found, and the docket can't be found. And the point is this happens so often, and it's not the child's fault, and the child is languishing in detention simply because a matter, even though it could have gone to trial within that 2 months, is not getting to trial for various other reasons, at which stage, hopefully, the legal representative will say to the magistrate, constitution requires speedy finalization of this trial, it's not getting finalized, and the matter will then, the magistrate hopefully will say, okay, remove the matter from the roll, and when you really put it back on the roll. And that's what we're trying to say, is if that's how it works out in practice according to the Constitution at the moment, then we prefer to have that than have a provision in the bill which gives it 2 years, which seems to allow for a 2 year period. That's practically what we're trying to say.
I know what you're trying to say.
Well, we can get that to you. When will you?
If you can get that, there must have been decisions around that.
I can get that research.
Constitution.
I was going to say most of the cases on speedy trial was defined criteria that we may consider that. So, the overall thing is that the feedback is not from what you would consider to be acceptable. Of course, there are not that many cases that are trying to drive
what I'm looking at is what is the clause adding? And to my mind, the clause is saying it's limiting the amount of time a child can be in detention in a particular case, 12 months or 2 years. So that is the maximum that the child can be in detention, and then the exclusions of the serious offenses and whether they're being played on the part of the child. So it's sort of a limitation thing. It's a question of do you, I mean, Anne's point is, well, you've got the ordinary, you don't have anything like this at the moment. So it's a question of is this adding anything really of value? Do we want to determine sort of what is a CD trial? And I think that's where the Jewish movement will become important. So let's tag this and see. I mean, from my mind, this is a tricky clause for public perception, because is it generally going to be people who are your more serious case, because they've had failed lines, they're in detention. And one needs to be careful of the public backlash. I mean, Jackie's point of you know, the regional court case, well, what happens if the trial has started and the child has succeeded? Okay, you can't remove it from the role. You've got to acquit the child or carry on with it. So yeah, I'm not comfortable with yeah, you've got to, if in that case, if the trial is taking too long and the child has succeeded, it's either a matter of saying they have to close the case. Anyway, I don't want to get into a legal argument on that, but yeah. But anyway, I think let's look at it, but let's see what the jurisprudence is, see what value this clause is adding.
I don't think it's so much whether this clause adds value. I think the point is, do we feel that there should be a limit, no matter how serious or sensitive the child has been committed, for how long the child remains in the process before the final outcome? How would you like to hear? Even if there's nothing for adults, so I think we do want it. Whether the figures we've got here are correct or not, we can debate. And finally, if the majority don't want it, fine, I can live with it. But I think we should first try to see whether we can. And the reason is obviously signaling that no matter what these children have done, they are children. And therefore, these courts cannot just have their own way. There must be a maximum time within which the matter is resolved. But a reasonable maximum time. I think we should consider it, Jay. I'm a bit surprised at you because I know how you think normally. And most of the time we agree. And where we disagree, often it's for good reasons. This time, I can't see. You see, my researcher will explain to you after. Has he got any good reasons to disagree?
Okay, but where it stands at the moment, we want to look at the jurisprudence. I must just point out to you that for the serious cases, there is no limit. Okay, they're excluded. The 2 years and the 1 year are they must be released from detention unless the child is charged. So in a serious case of limit, the child can take 5 years. And if it's a child full, similarly, and then if we do
So there's one other point that you can take to your study group, and that is please note that it's from plea. Now you can delay plea until the beginning of your trial if you want to. So it's not from the date of arrest.
Well, the 2 years is from the date of arrest.
It's from plea, isn't it? Oh, sorry,
no.
In the new provision, yeah.
2A is for a period of 2 years from the date upon which the child is placed in detention or prison, or 1 year from the plea.
Yeah.
So that is there. But look, what we've said is let's I think Anne, if you can help us with the jurisprudence.
I've asked my office to research it.
Let's see what that is, and we'll discuss this further.
Thank you. I just want to check if it's possible to include other facilities. Are we only concerned about those awaiting child in prison, or even in other facilities?
The NGO formulation recommends the inclusion of child and youth care centers.
Representing the child is lost. to chapter 9, sentence
2? No, you can. Sorry, before we go on, can I just come back to 16? I think the CSO in 16, you said you don't understand why it's there. John reply on page 24 of the department text. Not clear what the commentator is saying here. We don't have a copy of the supplemental submission. Jackie, explain that on page 44 of your document. On page 42 of your document, 2-1, provision should be made, blah, blah, blah. What's that about? And basically, there's always a problem.
I must admit that I'm not too sure what they're talking about either.
I like the patience.
No,
I like the video camera. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, presumably, as a public representative, of course, you'll have to hold it up. What the hell is this? But for now, we'll flag it in Carol's favorite word in the last 2 minutes. Okay. 69, please.
The short answer is that the child has a school that is definitely paying attention
to the court's chat. Now, who can disagree with this? I don't think it's Jackie disagrees. All right, let's go on. One way of going about that's a sensible way. But then the politicians way to hide that is to leave it where it is. So people say you're being soft, but they no, not really. We're saying, look, in the current can't understand this. What are the commission members saying? I think let's move them to the top. Why are you smiling, Jim? It doesn't matter.
Does it make any difference?
Yeah, it does. All right, leave it.
If you're trying to suggest that you're not being too soft,
maybe we leave it there. Yeah, I just did that. You're being for option A. You hear what you think of the magistrate. I'll just give you that way of it. Right, then over to you, Jackie.
Thank you, Chair. There's a few submissions, or there's lots of submissions. CSPRI. And this is echoed by GSL and RACAN, says that one should also include in 71, as when considering imposing sentence, first of all, whether or not, what the proximity of the designed facility or prison, designated facility or prison, is to the child community, parents or caregivers. And secondly, what the conditions are at the facility or the prison regarding the availability, appropriateness, effectiveness of existing services and interventions specific for children. So basically what they're trying to say is the point of sending the child to prison, if that prison is not going to help them with any programs that are available at that prison, you know, if you're sending a child to prison to prevent reoffending at the end of the day, you also want them to receive programs that are going to help them for that. And then,
yeah,
I mean...
Okay, they're saying, well, yeah, but they covered it.
You know, I think that's the general principle of sentencing, and you know, obviously one would agree with that, but we're talking specifically in relation to a sentence. Before a magistrate decides to send a child to prison as a measure of last resort, he also should take into account whether that prison can actually serve a role in rehabilitating that child. And the way he would, one, the way one would try and get the magistrate to apply his mind is by forcing him to inquire from the probation officer or from a correctional official as to what the services or programs in that specific prison are going to be for that child.
You're talking about if and G.
I'd like to put it in the way it's confusing as well. Is there some way to combine what you've got to say? Okay, can we add another add in which you thought about G?
Yeah, no, I mean, look, the way that they've worded F and G is very specific. Whereas F at the moment is very broad. So I think if you do, I personally wouldn't include it, but if the overall view is to include something along those lines, can we make it consistent with the rest of the world?
It's funny you're saying that I'm going to be able to include it either. It's just that the answer given by the department intellectually says, by PMA, they had a lot of time to answer. And look what they gave us. It's not fair. So it's a disingenuous answer. And that's just me personally. So the reason is not a policy one, it's an intellectual one. But actually, 1.1, does not deal with it. Instead of saying, no, we think that what they're asking is too specific and unnecessary, and so you said, it's covered in any case, you look at it, and it's just that of an answer. But I looked at it last night, I would have said, hey, come back to the NGS and push the meeting to go in that direction, because now we're in what time, we're in the discussion. But because the answer was so disingenuous, I said, so go over to the NGS and look what's happening.
Aren't those specifically dealt with in provisions rather than under 6 sites? Have we looked at detail? I assume that when you deal with 77 and deal with
what is 77?
That's the intervention facility and prisons. Are they specific?
I agree with that because this one is objective.
What's the next one?
Rejection 241 on your page? The next one is just Professor Blanche saying he agrees with
the
Professor Blanche saying that he agrees with 73. GSL they're a bit unclear on how it's going to be ensured and supported. So if they say, for instance, the bill does not prescribe that the child must receive some sort of specific intervention program to address the offending behavior, that's the same thing that I just said. So 3.2, they say, the bill must allow the court to require additional and more in-depth assessment of the child before sentencing. That's covered in pre-sentence reports. The bill should require a probation officer to furnish proof that the intended place of detention, that's the same issue that CFPRI raised. And then the bill does not deal specifically with addressing offending behavior. It actually does when one deals with community sentences and restorative justice processes. So that's that. Chair, I wanted to take us back to the comment of Professor Blanche, because the problem is there, when you summarize these extra comments, additional comments, that's on page 49, and they actually slot in because he gave an additional submission. And so, actually, in our response, you would see we give a much, because he deals with the response, or these additional comments are on page 49 of the Jackie's document under 3.4. But they're summarized there, but they actually deal with 70 sub 3. So, if we could just maybe look at them as well, because we're actually going to grow.
What's your response?
Well, we just said that, because he would like, basically, what he would like us to do is. To expand on the seriousness of the offense, and he gives specific ideas there, but then he does this in regard to only, and he wants a separate clause for residential facility. That comes back to when he came to the committee and he said there should be more guidance about when you say the child here. But so we said if we do that for residential facilities, then we must still have the same criteria in 70 sub 3 for prison, so we think we could look at that.
In terms of the imprisonment, Kaito sounds to take responsibility for these services for these children, so we don't have a problem with it.
You see, it doesn't tie them down necessarily. It's just that they must consider these things when they're making the decision. They must, at the end of the day, say, even though the local prison is not very well equipped, it's close to the parents, and unfortunately, in this case, we can only send the child to prison. There's no other option, so we're going to do it anyway. But it does mean that in those cases where they could be considering a range of options, including a non-custodial one, then they might opt for the non-custodial option because of the lack of facilities. And in fact, you know, in the case of DPP versus Peter Maritzburg girl, the court actually looked at the fact that Westville Prison did not have a school for girls and couldn't offer this child an education, and so they, was one of the reasons why they didn't send it to prison. So the point I'm making really, it's a principle that has to be considered, so it doesn't oblige anyone to do anything.
The next one was RACAN, and they were also basically saying in terms of 73 that one of the factors should be whether, if the court is going to sentence a child to prison, that that prison does offer programs, which is the same issue. Yeah. And then finally, the Alliance just was going on about minimum sentences, but I just have to preempt any discussion on minimum sentencing, saying that we will desist from that argument at present.
Thank you very much. Okay, next one, please. We're going on to
721, is that right? And that's an impact statement, impact of the sentence of the victim. It starts off by saying what it is. It's a sworn statement by the victim or someone authorized by the victim to make a statement on behalf of the victim, which reflects the type of the physical, psychological, social, financial, or any other consequences of the victim in question. And the prosecutor was adducing evidence addressing the court. Furnish the court with a victim's impact statement. And if the content of the victim's impact statement is not disputed, that statement is acceptable as evidence of its production. Short and sweet. Perhaps give a bit of background. I think it's quite a bit mentioned in deliberation a few weeks ago that in the deliberation.
Okay. Professor Tablanche, out of the NGOs that made the submissions, is the only one that supports victim impact statements. He says that it's in line with the Law Commission sentencing framework report. The other submissions.
Before we go on, you said so that we should, the court and not the prosecutor should decide. The Republican replies, yes, the court indeed does decide. But when I read it, maybe I'm wrong. The 721 says the prosecutor may, when adducing evidence or addressing the court of sentencing, consider the interest of the victim. So it's the prosecutor that does, but then subsequently the court that decides whether it's acceptable. That's what it says. Mm-hmm. Now, how can a professor not understand that? That's what worries me. Maybe there's more something. I just think because he's a professor, and me, hey, what do I know? And to me, I'm thinking like what professor does. Which either means he's as silly as me, or I'm as bright as him. But there was one problem. The message in my committee that I chair, I think that disagree with the chair, is that if there's no clarity, just give. If it sounds representative, so what? Okay? It's not a question of elegance. Yeah. It's a question of somebody who doesn't understand. I don't understand it. I agree with Gerard Blunt. I don't agree with you, department, and quite frankly, I represent the man sincere because he's not self-care. Carol's a lawyer, he will not give you a little bit. Okay, right, thank you.
There are other submissions.
Now,
before I get into the other submissions, I do have to say that the NGOs obviously are concerned with the views of victims in relation to what has happened to them once. As a result of crime. Having said that, however, the remainder of the submissions are opposed to the inclusion of section of Clause 71 in the Child Justice Bill. Because of the fact, you know, the whole idea of the victim impact statement happened, part of the history was is that at the same time as the Child Justice Bill was being developed, the Sexual Offences Bill was being developed at the same time. And in conjunction, the victim impact statement was proposed in both law reform processes. However, when this committee deliberated on the Sexual Offences Bill, which I would suggest is perhaps the preeminent piece of legislation in which victim impact statements should have been placed, it decided not to include victim impact statements in that piece of legislation. The effect now to include it in the child justice legislation would be that only in respect of children are victim impact statements required, not in respect of adults who have committed crimes against people, interpersonal crimes or any kind of crime. So, and it's not just restricted to sexual offences, it's in relation to every type of offence. So it's just, again, on the equality arguments in relation to the fact that it's now, it will be more onerous on children in relation to sentencing to have a victim impact statement than it would for the ordinary offender, adult offender.
I was in the committee at that time, but if I remember the subsequent discussion, that you can when it comes to sentencing, you can put before the court pretty much whatever factor you want. So if there is psychological harm or physical harm, then in any event, the prosecutor is going to put that before the court. And it was sort of felt as being, well, then what's the point?
Yeah, but can I ask you a question? I thought this idea of a victim is a different meaning. Mm. That it's meant to have some sort of mediation or healing process.
Mm-hmm.
It's also meant to say, although this child has committed a terrible offense, the victim recognizes the child has done it, and therefore is more sympathetic. Or let's say, wanting revenge or retribution. But if the adult has done the same thing, they would say, lock them up. Since the child, I feel these are the consequences for me, but I would like some sort of reconciliation. So there's a different meaning here from the sexual offense. Or am I talking about?
No, I don't think so.
No. Very Jackie.
I'm just concerned that because it could go both ways. I mean, on the one side, you might have someone saying, yes, no, you know, by all means, I realize it's a child. Please treat him leniently. And you could have others saying, well, it's a child. You know, he shouldn't have done that. Why? And asking for remorse. You know, so it could swing both ways, and that's the danger. It's because you're not having that swing in both ways for adults. You don't have that same kind of backlash towards an adult offender as that you might be opening a court up for influence in sentencing for a child.
I can answer a question. Now, this victim impact assessment has nothing to do with victim offender mediation.
No.
So it plays no role in that. So if you remove this thing, that carries on.
Yes.
Okay, so what is the feeling of the majority, right?
Chair, I just wanted to add in regard to the Sexual Offences Bill and how it works, or the Sexual Offences Act at the moment. In Section 66 of that Act, information on the impact of the sexual offence on the complainant must be placed before the prosecutor, which section then also deals with, among others, the manner in which prosecutors under the direction of the NDPP must approach the prosecution of sexual offence cases, to say that victim impact statements are completely left out in the Sexual Offences Act is also not completely true. And if the point was that it was mooted here, and I don't know, it was suggested from the committee at that stage, so we asked the committee if they want to take it out at this stage, but yeah, that's why I was inserted in this act. And I don't think you will really be able to argue that we're treating children different from adults in this regard, in regard to victims' impact statements, because this is a bill that deals specifically with children in this regard.
There was a committee of the
on the one hand, I feel for victims, and I can understand that you would want to, when you see the victim of a crime, you want to put the harm that's been done to you before the court. But that's why you have a prosecutor, and the prosecutor is going to put that before the court when sentencing takes place. So I don't know whether much is added by, you know, a victim statement in addition to what a prosecutor is going to put before the court in any event. I don't know, I wasn't here in 2002.
Who was here?
I think it was the
first one. Why did they put it in? Why did they? They are meeting the law now. You want to phone them and find out what they are on behalf of them.
Chair, I can read it to you from the CMG minutes.
Okay.
Well, it's very short. They didn't just go, well, the CMG summarized it shortly. It was on the 26th of March. Mr. Swart asked about the concept of victim impact statement. Mrs. Skelton responded that the bill has not included a specific... responded that the bill has not included a specific provision for the victim impact statement in the section dealing with diversion. However, the bill states that diversion may be postponed in order to find the views of the victim. The chairperson thought that any evidence obtained from a victim was a victim impact statement. He asked if such a statement required a professional. Mrs. Skelton did not know. She explained that a study was being conducted regarding victims and its findings could impact the justice system in the future. Advocate DeLange advocated inserting a broad clause to encourage a victim impact statement in an appropriate case. But the court should not assign anyone a duty to carry this out. It suggested the following wording as a basis. Where appropriate, during sentencing, the
magistrate should be encouraged to give an opportunity for the victim to relate the impact of those things.
What is this?
Like, what's the end of that debate?
He had the last word.
And in there, they had a specific recommendation. So all sentencing in future, both for adults and children, in all situations, would have, and I presume, even if the Law Commission report comes back, the Council of Legislation had a clause in evidence relating to the interests of victims. So they was foreseen in that report that, and I'm sure it will come back at some stage, that victim impact statements will form part of this kind of legislation. So that's just maybe where his report comes from, because he worked closely.
All right, so what are we saying? This seems to be the people who are saying it's proper, but I think to give it more time and attention. There are some ways in which we say, drop it, not completely. So drop it. Drop it from here, but keep the debate open.
Thank you. that. I'm talking to my people.
Because the direction was from the reverse. If you take it out of here,
yeah,
and look at where around it. So as far as root cause is DK01, right? But the issue as a whole, the concept, if you come to flag, part of the final week. Okay, root cause is 72. Is anything else on 72.1? I think not. 72.3.
Mr. Chair, that's three sentences report. The court proposing a sentence note. You're going to ask the provision of the who is out of the person. In practice, who is it? Now, why do you want to add up a suitable person, given that the department now says they've got enough probation officers that they can do everything? How do you have a head up? Why are you laughing at such?
I'm also alarmed by suitable person because even this is more even critical for us to narrow it to even only the qualified probation officers to do the presentation.
Yeah. I'm not sure where that came from. Mm-hmm. Shalina saying it might be at the state in the board of staff.
Can't be approved. Okay, so we take that out, okay? Then can I ask you a quick question before I throw it over to the NGO? This is a question of clarity, okay? That's why I jump in now to save time. Now, what says a child justice court that imposes a sentence other than that recommended in the three sentences report must recall the reason? Does this imply that in general it's the probation officer's three sentence report that decides the sentence?
No. The recommendation.
So the provision of another qualified legal. So why is it even like that? I'm just saying the average human being, the masses, this is what we see. But maybe I'm wrong. So we see that the implication of four as it is, that the probation officer decides, and then if the probation officer's report is not accepted, then the court must give it to you.
Complaints at the moment between the two institutions.
educate.
Talking about the sentence as a construction. Does it in its literal construction not mean, listen to it, right? Come to help. A child justice court that imposes a sentence other than that recommended in the sentence of the court must be for reason. This implies that the probation officer has a right to decide it.
You're a top official in a department and you make a recommendation to a minister.
Yeah.
It's a recommendation.
Yeah.
So if the minister doesn't follow your recommendation, you've got to, just so that it's on paper, so that you
won.
And so it shows that he's applied his mind and looked at the recommendation, but he's decided not to go along.
No, I understand the concept of what you're saying, the fact that there's a philosophy and the practice of the philosophy. I'm asking about the statement that it's fine. If I'm the only one seeing it, the way I read it was, it took no interest to decide the statement that, hey, if the court doesn't agree,
again, as I mentioned right at the beginning of our deliberation today, that's what's coming out.
Nobody else is seeing it, so I mean, it's fine. If somebody else is seeing it, it's not for us to see it, let's move on. Sorry?
If I'm out in response to the question shows that I'm asking from your perspective.
Fine.
Well, I mean, the ordinary.
I'm not disagreeing what you're saying. I understand what you're saying. What do you think? Does that sense to say what you're saying clearly enough?
Do you want to change the word sentence to report? That helps.
Let's
move on without even knowing what it's saying.
Or personal copies. We are coming with systems. Why can't we say proof? I understand they are worried that what if the probation officer makes a recommendation without a proof that there is space. But I'm saying if we make it phone statement for us, it will be a problem because it will mean physically going, the center manager or the facility manager physically going to make a phone statement. So I'm saying they can still redraft it in such a way that there's a proof, but not really limited to.
Okay, so Jackie, now what are the policy issues here that you want to take?
Okay, some of the discussion was about the other suitable person, which is now dropped by the website. The other submission was also on the form statement, which is dropped by the website. The main concern that's left is in relation to the time period for the report, the availability of the report. And the bill talks about a calendar month. And some of the submissions are to say that, well, should we make it 20 working days, which is essentially a calendar month, for children who are in detention, because those are the ones that we're most concerned about, and 6 weeks. I know it's giving more away than what's at present, but and that came from practicalities. What is happening at present is that generally reports do take about 6 weeks to happen. So we thought, well, make it more onerous in respect of the children in detention and give 6 weeks for those children who aren't in detention for the possibility of the report being finalized.
Well, I wanted to ask, there was again with the resource implication. They were saying it's pre-sentence reports and the probation officer needs 6 weeks to do it, and we're saying you need a sentence within 48 hours. So that was just in this clause, it really came out different. NGOs gave different time periods, and we put the 30 days there as a maximum, so the 20 could still be accommodated because the 30 is a maximum, but I mean 6 weeks is way beyond 30 even, but that's just a comment. And it also that links to, if you want to finalize the court case and everything, with a specific amount of time. And but what happens in practice is what we did not know.
Yes. think this is partly dictated by, I think, the RAP campaign. Okay, this is one where
Well,
it says that they have provisions and challenges of the norm of 30 days and then where they have different circumstances. What is it about? I'm not following it.
No, the sex offender, that was Childline, they were saying that it should be 6 weeks, is preferable for the sex offender. But we say, I mean, I get your point about the one calendar month, but what we say is not 20 days, it's 20 working days, which is equivalent to the one calendar month. You know, the assessments are obviously, again, we've got to look at the nature of what's happening. A pre-sentence report is a far more in-depth investigation than an assessment is. An assessment is looking at certain defined things, whereas a pre-sentence report is fully investigating the circumstances of the children, going to visit the home of the children, speaking to other people involved in the child's life to come up with a proper formulation as to what's going to happen to the child in the future. So the two processes are different. And I mean, I get your point about 48 hours and the length of time, but they are also far more pre-sentence report. Well, no, there's not such a thing as pre-sentence report, but it is a different type of investigation. But again, because basically it was just to give the Department of Social Development a little bit more leeway because it wasn't so pressing in relation to a child who's not in detention for the 2 weeks difference.
I think currently there's an acronym between MP Office and Street, whether you are in custody or you are with the parent. And I think with the department we would love to keep that.
If you have looked at that there's a progress is if the parent has, I mean if the social worker has already committed the report, that report can be submitted earlier. You don't have to wait for the time frame. But if as long as you can stick to that.
Do you want to
come to the
thing? Thank you. Ah, before we do, let's have